Blog Talk Radio.
In much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here are your hosts, Jay and Dre.
I kept my baby on the treetop when the wind blows the tree. La 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 la. Go to sleep, go to sleep. Close your big bloodshot eyes. You're a dope and you're alive. And I hope you don't wake up. A twirly, talatiho, a tiro, a tiro, a tiro, a tiro, a tiro, a.
Is it over? Oh, we're over on. We're live. Hey, welcome. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Tuesday night, February the 5th, 2019. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and we are here. We have survived watching that Super Bowl on Sunday, Super Bowl 53, won by the Patriots over the Rams, 13-3, I believe. I don't know. I clearly nodded off. I don't have any idea what happened. Jay, that was a thing. It was about the dullest Super Bowl you could imagine. It was the lowest scoring Super Bowl in history, and I think I just finally woke up from it, like, just right now. I don't know where to even start with this particular game, because it was just awful.
Huh?
We're what? On. We're live,
oh,
I think.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I heard the lullabies. And started to make me think I was watching Super Bowl again.
Yeah. No, you're. Yeah. I'm just waking up. You're Jay-Z tonight. The Z as in Z's. Getting your Z's in. Yeah. Man, that was rough.
That was terrible. I mean, you know, you sit there and you're watching the game and counting away the minutes and hours of your life that you'll never get back. So that's bad enough. And waiting for something to happen. And then you have to realize that, oh my God, you're the co-host of a podcast that has to break down this garbage. And, you know, and I was ready to come on the show. I'm like, oh, do you remember that thing? Oh, what about that other thing that happened? No, I don't remember that either. Wait, do you remember that big play? Oh, nope. That never happened. I mean, 13-3, that's unacceptable. Okay, 13-3 is acceptable if you are the 2000 Ravens playing the 85 Bears in a Super Bowl. 13-3 is acceptable. 13-3 is unacceptable when it you know, and you and I are not on the side of we hate defensive games. I mean, some of the best games that we've ever seen have been, you know, low scoring, hard hitting, smash mouth football. That was not hard-hitting, smash-mouth football with great defense. That was awful, and there's no other words to describe it. Worst ratings in a decade, probably has something to do with the fact that it was the Super Bowl matchup nobody wanted. So
right.
You had that aspect on top of it. So you have the Patriots, who everybody hates, playing a team from a city that nobody cares about football in and doesn't deserve a franchise, let alone two, because Los Angeles has proven that they can't support the NFL. So not a compelling matchup from that standpoint. You thought it would be more of a compelling matchup from an X's and O's standpoint. But, oh, my God, everything about that game just sucked. I'm glad it was quick. I mean, it was zippy. You know, like, the game just, you know, right along. But I mean, it was just, everything about the game was just sort of blah. The commercials sucked. Halftime was boring. You know, you thought started to get a little bit of excitement late just because there was some offense. But when the first play in the red zone takes place with 7 minutes left to go in the game.
Oh, my God.
How do you make that exciting? You've got the number one versus, I believe, the number four offense in football. And it turned into a battle of the minds between Wade Phillips and Bill Belichick, you know, with the defense, the more defensive minded guys out there. And Sean McVay looked like he was completely outmatched and outclassed. Like, Rams have apparently never seen a zone defense in their lives before.
Jared Goff never just, seen one before. He was,
and Tom Brady played like crap too.
Yes. He was not good.
Give full credit to Wade Phillips and that Rams defense. You want to talk about one of the greatest wasted efforts of all time. Because you saw it on Sunday if you were paying any attention to the game, which was really hard to do.
It was. I don't even know what words to describe that.
That's what I mean. It's like, how do you break a game down? You know, a part of me was thinking, you know, I should have just contacted, because we don't really do any pre-production for the show. And I thought, like, let's just say we're going to have our big Super Bowl recap, and then we get on the show and basically just say, like, the show, they're like, oh, that sucked, and then end the show. And that would be our Super Bowl 53 recap for all eternity. I'm going to now rename this Super Bowl L.
This is the shortest preview for a show that I've ever written. It's one sentence.
Yes.
And the sentence is, Jay and Dre wake up from 53rd big game just in time to talk about just what the hell that was.
I don't know. You know, and the game isn't deserving of a deep dive.
It's not.
It really wasn't. You can't even get all that, you know, excited about bad calls. There were a couple. There's a holding call. Even Tony Romo on the biggest run of the game when the Rams were finally trying to get something going, they called holding on the Rams. It just didn't exist. Brandon Cooks got interfered with, but it was sort of sneaky interference. It wasn't like the blatant, you know, Nikhil Roby Coleman type interference. We get the three penalties in one. Yeah, you don't get the three penalties in one. You didn't have the trifecta. But no, that was interference. That was interference most of the season. But you know, and the very next play, it was the ball was intercepted and the game was basically over.
Right.
There was a touchdown opportunity for the Rams where the Patriots defender got back late, just in time to knock the touchdown catch out of the receiver's hand. That was kind of an exciting moment.
Good job, Jason McCourty. Way to go. Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Johnny Hecker punted the hell out of the ball. I guess he was my X factor. He set the record. He broke the NFL record for longest punt. They didn't run a fake punt. They didn't run anything like really tricky. You had 2 weeks to prepare. Where was the
right?
Yeah, you know, Sean McVay clearly doesn't have the stones of Doug Peterson. I can tell you that.
Or he may not have the quarterback that Doug Peterson had. Or it's Nick Foles, so we're not talking about a great player. But really, Jared Goff reverted all the way back to Jeff Fisher, Jared Goff.
I was so afraid. If I had enough time to devote to social media, I was going to start my hash. I put it on the thing when I did the hashtag, the next Sean McVay, right? Yeah. I was going to start putting up pictures of guys with that hashtag, and like Jeff Fisher would have been the first one.
Man.
That sure looked like the Jeff Fisher Rams and the Jeff Fisher Jared Goff, but that's the Super Bowl, and this is what you came up with?
Yeah. No, I mean, if you got a kid that, as great as Goff has been, we know that he's capable of turtling and having some really bad games. And if that's what he does in the biggest moment, then that's all you can do. There's not much Sean McVay can do if his quarterback is going to completely take a shit in the middle of the field and be afraid as hell of any kind of zone coverage or whatever the Patriots were doing that stopped him from throwing the ball on third down. Just looking, just standing there looking.
Yeah.
Third and two. Dude, take off, do something. Get rid of it. What? Do something. Yeah.
So, and I'll give further evidence as to hear why now Tom Brady is not the GOAT. Just bear with me here for a minute. Because, you know, I've always been all over my point differential or anything like that. But the performance that you saw from the Rams, right? What would the final score of that game have been with like a Joe Montana offense?
Steve Young, Troy Aikman,
Steve,
Brett Favre.
No. Though the Patriots get the ball punted to them eight straight times the Patriots get the ball on a punt and get 3 points.
Go.
So do not – you can't crap all over the Rams. You can't because they lost. But you got to crap all over just as much the Patriots because they didn't really do much to win the game. They had one drive. Which was the same play over and over and over.
Right.
That was their game plan.
Same formation, same play.
Yeah.
It's over and over because the Rams couldn't stop it. No, well, the opposite of the Super Bowl last year, the Eagles beating the Patriots. It feels like a couple of years ago because it feels like I lost a year of my life watching the Super Bowl on Sunday. The Super Bowl last year where all it took was a couple of defensive plays for somebody to make, and that was it. That was good enough to win the game. And this year, all it took was a couple of offensive plays, and that's all it took for anybody to win. If the Rams would have made a couple of offensive plays first, they would have won the game. And I would have lost the pick and lost the handicapping championship and just lost the whole season. But it just took a couple. All it took was Tom Brady getting a couple of balls in the air to Gronkowski and all those throws to Edelman. That's all it took, just to make a couple throws. And Goff couldn't even make a couple of throws. It was bad.
Yeah, and the Rams' defense was adjusting. They started finally, you know, they you could see that they were adapting and the defense was sort of learning what the Patriots were doing for most of it. It's like, and you just kept giving your offense the ball back, and they just kept going nowhere. They're taking sacks to get out of field goal range or, just a lot of movement between the 20s. And actually not even a lot of movement between the 20s, because if you were between the 20s, you'd have seen a lot more field goals. You're talking a lot of movement between,
the 40.
These teams were getting to like the 40 and stopping.
Yep. And it was the most basic rudimentary game strategy you could possibly come across for the Patriots. Just stop the Rams run. Stop the running game and stop any deep balls and just watch Jared Goff wilt under pressure. That was it.
Apparently that's all it took. Bill Belichick saw everything he needed.
The Rams sort of stopped their own running game without having Todd Gurley out there. So that whole mystery continues into the offseason that clearly he wasn't. They say he was fine.
He's fine. That's what I keep hearing. He's fine. Nothing to
MVP
see here.
MVP candidate that got like – two carries the entire postseason.
Yeah.
I know it was one too, but it felt like about two. But he's fine. Didn't look fine. You didn't use him like he was fine. And when he did run the ball, he didn't look like he was fine. He didn't have that burst clearly. And they knew it, and everybody else knew it. Now, why you got to be secretive and not address it or you know, why you got to act like you're hiding a state secret, I don't know. But clearly, he wasn't the same player that he was earlier in the season. And C.J. Anderson, had his run earlier in the playoffs, but he clearly didn't have it as well. And that's all it took. Just stop the run and stop any deep balls, and the Patriots didn't have to do anything else.
Yeah. I'm gonna. You know who my MVP of the game was?
Who's that?
Tony Romo. who, and I said this early in the last part of last season, we haven't really talked about it much, that I really enjoyed his commentary. And I continue to be entertained by the work that he is doing. I think it's a little over-enthusiastic at times. I think there may have been a prop bet after watching that AFC Championship game for how many times he was going to say, "Here we go," during the Super Bowl. But, he's spot on. I mean, you don't get a lot of guys who are that, he clearly knows the game of football. And he's doing a great job. Now they need to free him from the stifling mediocrity of Jim Nantz as being the head guy at CBS.
They want stifling mediocrity. That's exactly what
they
want.
I know if you, well, yes, look at CBS's lineup of TV shows. Stifling mediocrity should be their their motto.
And also, sports wise, it's just the standard practice that your play by play guy is going to be is standard mediocrity. Look at Fox with Joe Buck.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, he is just a stiff. I mean, yeah, Joe Buck's a total stiff. Joe Buck tries to be cool, it doesn't work. Buck and Aikman craps all over all of the NFC teams because he beat them all. And that's why it was so funny that when they did that first Thursday night, one of the first Thursday night football games with Buck and Aikman, when they were calling an AFC-only matchup, that it's probably the best I'd ever heard Buck and Aikman in the booth, because you didn't get Troy Aikman crapping all over the other team, because he clearly has his biases. But I enjoy the commentary, but even a good team in the booth or any entertainment that you get from that, and Tony Romo's clearly, he's telling you, because you're seeing it, I'm seeing it, he's telling you it, like what the Rams need to be doing to be successful. This was pretty much after he pulled full-on Nostradamus during the AFC Championship game and pretty much predicted everything the Patriots were going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, as it was happening. I mean, if the Rams had, the Rams needed to hire him.
Yeah. Well, someone needs to hire him, put him in their front office, or make him a coach or something.
Yeah, the guy knows what he's doing. He's entertaining. He's clearly a smart guy. He knows the game of football. I do appreciate his commentary, and Jim Nantz is just such a stiff that it's really hard for me to get excited about it. But I guess I'd take those two over that Monday night team with Booger McFarland on his roller coaster. going up and down the sideline, and whatever the Buck
Jason Witten was just bad.
ESPN needs to back up the truck and try to hire Romo away from CBS or something. Or Gruden might be back. Who knows? The clock is ticking. He could be doing his
camp
pretty soon.
I don't know. Mark Davis is that much of a dunce that he might keep rooting around forever. Who knows?
Yeah, you could get the whole Raiders front office and get a decent team. You get a decent play-by-play guy, then you get Gruden and Mayock.
Right. They're much better on TV than in the front office.
I don't know. We don't know. Jury's out on Mayock, because I guess this is his first gig. Doing this type of stuff. We know he can scout talent, which it seems like what they've mostly brought him in for, because he's pretty much deferred to Gruden, Murga, as the man. But I mean, we were 12 minutes into this show, and I was tapped out on talking about the Super Bowl. But it's an hour long show.
You've already deferred it to something else.
Yeah, I've already stretched into my MVP being the color commentator.
Yeah, obviously, all that predicting the plays and stuff, CBS, I guess they got enough complaints to go to Romo and say, you need to cut that out, because he didn't predict any plays in the Super Bowl. And I really think he wants to. You can almost hear him brimming at the seams and ready to call what he sees on the field and call out exactly what's about to happen. He could probably do it every play.
But the funny thing was, he wasn't doing it for the Chiefs in that AFC Championship game. He wasn't predicting what the Chiefs were going to do. He was only predicting what the Patriots were going to do, which meant they must have been telegraphing something, or they had enough tells that if you paid attention, you could see the signs. But yeah, I mean,
that's the thing. Belichick and Brady have been around for the past 75 years. So
yeah.
Anybody that's been watching them do what they do at a high level, as Tony Romo has, being an NFL quarterback for the last 15 years, probably does know exactly what they're going to do on every single play. Whereas Pat Mahomes just got here, so you really can't necessarily tell everything that's going to happen.
Or Andy Reid is a bit of, you know, a bit more creative, I guess.
Possibly that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and
no.
Josh McDaniels can't be all that creative with Patriots, because what's he working with? What
a
41
year old quarterback and slot receivers at every position.
And number three receivers all around the field. Yes. So yeah. I mean, there's only so much you can do.
Yes.
Speaking of that, the Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman. The hot take, of course, out of the Super Bowl about him is that he's going to make the Hall of Fame off of games like this, playoff games.
No.
And
there was the whole week before the Super Bowl, there was this push that I don't know if you'd watched any of it, but a lot of the talking head shows.
I heard a little of it.
We're starting a lot of this Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer push. No, Julian Edelman's not a Hall of Famer. Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer. Why isn't Deion Branch a Hall of Famer?
There's a hot take right back at you. No, well,
or
we
Troy
have to
Brown. I mean, when Tom Brady puts the ball up 56 times in a Super Bowl, or 62 times like he did against Atlanta, a lot of ball. There's only so many guys you have. The balls are going to guys. But no, Julian Edelman's not a Hall of Famer.
But we have to differentiate between our opinion of is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer and will Julian Edelman someday be a Hall of Famer? Because whether we
think
he
think
is or not doesn't really matter.
I still think he's not. I still don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
See, I think he's going to get in one day. I don't know when,
just
but
for Patriots slurping? Is that what it's going to be?
That's a part of it. It's Patriots slurping. It's East Coast slurping. It's almost like the Yankees. And I think if there wasn't a PED thing around Andy Pettit, he probably would already be in, and wasn't
like
that
Mike
good.
Mike Messina
but because
is not a Hall
of
Famer. Mike Messina is not a Hall of Famer, and he just got in. So,
right. If Messina played his whole career in Seattle, he wouldn't be in a Hall of Fame.
No, Mike Messina pitched 14 years for the Arizona Diamondbacks and had the exact same stats. He wouldn't have sniffed the Hall of Fame.
He'd get 10% of the vote. No, it's definitely Patriots bias, East Coast bias is going to get him in. He's basically going to be like a little bit like Scottie Pippen in that you can look at what Brady has done in winning these Super Bowls, and you can make the argument that he wouldn't – not that he wouldn't win any of them without Edelman, but that – think about this particular Super Bowl just for an example – if Edelman wasn't there and didn't do what he did, what would the Patriots have done? Look at what little they did with him going crazy with 10 catches for a buck 40 or whatever that he did. If he wasn't there, they might still be playing. It might be a 3-3 tie in overtime, and they might still be going. So they're going to trot that out and go, oh, my God, for all the greatness of Tom Brady, what would he be without Julian Edelman? They're going to make that argument and sort of compare him to Pip in that
Tom
respect.
Brady,
I don't
Tom
agree
Brady.
With it, but –
They were winning Super Bowls before he was there.
No, I understand that. He wasn't there for all six rings. But I'm just telling you what the argument they're going to make is going to be.
Well, they're idiots.
They're going to make it. I can agree with that as well. No.
It's so much of this is that with the 24-hour news cycle, you have to fill some of these stations now where it is talking head shows from morning until evening. And you notice a lot of them end up like taking the same talking points from every other show. If you watch them in a row,
definitely.
So they're clearly being fed these talking points. I mean, it's obvious they're not coming up with these on their own. Somebody at ESPN, somebody at Fox goes through and says, here are the talking points for the day. Now we want your unique takes on all of these and tailor your things around them. There is, I believe it's the show on Fox with Jason Whitlock, my favorite guy. And
piece of shit.
I think Marcellus Wiley.
Yeah.
And they're the two guys talking. And the question came up, and no, Marcellus Wiley crapped all over Julian Edelman. So he's not a Hall of Famer. And we talk about this all the time. Like, there can be a Hall of really good, right?
Right.
And Julian Edelman's really good. He's a really good slot receiver, maybe one of the best ever. But Julian Edelman's not, and I don't even put him in best ever. He's just, he gets a lot of balls thrown his way.
I was about to say, if you call him one of the best slot receivers ever, then you're kind of
that's
building
why I took
a
it
case
back.
For the Hall of Fame.
That's why I took it back, because there have been a lot of great slot receivers throughout time, right?
Sure.
But he makes some space. Him and Tom Brady have been playing so long together, they kind of know where the guy's going to be. And but yeah, no, he's not a Hall of Famer.
When he gets in, and I'm telling you, he's going to get in. That video of his is going to be that arrow route just over and over again, because no one does anything like that as well as he does. Just run 7 yards downfield, fake like you're going one way, and then go and right there. So
yeah,
it's a limited skill, but he seems to have perfected it. And again, I don't know where the Patriots would have been without him. So there's certainly something for that. But yeah, the Rams' futility, and after all the numbers they were putting up and all the greatness of their offense, they went to sleep in the second half of the season, woke back up for the playoffs, and really confused people like me trying to pick their games, because I didn't know which Rams team you're going to get. And you got the great Rams against the Cowboys. You got the terrible Rams for the first three quarters against the Saints, and then they sort of woke up. And then you got the terrible Rams the entire game here against the Patriots. So they're very inconsistent, very young, still very inexperienced, which is what I was calling on picking against them all three games in the playoffs this year against the spread. I was calling on their inexperience and saying that they weren't quite ready yet, that they were building up to being a really solid, consistent team, but they're not quite there yet. But yeah, Jared Goff looks so terrible, looked so indecisive. Pro Football Focus, I didn't get this sound drop. You would have really laughed and liked this. They said that the Rams offense in the Super Bowl, and Jared Goff specifically, not adjusting to what New England was doing, the Rams coaching staff not adjusting to what New England was doing at all the entire game. They said it reminded them, they said when you have a great offense that puts up all these numbers and then somebody comes in with a defense that stifles you and you can't make an adjustment, all of a sudden now you're Mike McCarthy and you just turn into,
oh, no.
you don't know what you're doing. They said it by name, Mike McCarthy.
Wow.
You don't know how to make an adjustment.
Yeah.
Then that's what it turns into, and that's pretty much it. Yeah,
uh-oh.
Eight straight punts to
oh,
start
okay,
the game.
Still there,
was,
because you cracked up
yep,
really
no.
bad. It was you gave me the telltale oh. sign of being gone again. So I was waiting for you to just not be there and to have to take over for a few minutes. But that's a funny one, because
I'm not dead
that's
yet.
Been, that's been my calling card on this show for the last few seasons. with the lack of adjustments by Mark McCarthy and the Packers offense. And no, they just kept doing the same thing over and they just kept thinking it was going to work.
And
again,
did.
In the broadcast, they are highlighting all the intermediate stuff that's wide open.
Yeah, but, all the underneath
know.
Stuff that,
yeah.
that Goff couldn't find a way to get rid of the ball, couldn't locate those guys. He was just panicked. It was just, that's
yeah.
all you can say is it was just panic.
But when Goff actually did just, you know, and it was towards the end when they were pinned back and the broadcast and Romo's talking about, you know, this is where he just needs to stand in there and take some shots and get rid of it quick and deliver the ball. And they kind of started, you know, he started doing a little bit of that. But they got greedy and they couldn't put together the drive. And it was just, you know, the geniusness just did not allow them to do what Tom Brady and the Patriots will do to you to death, which is just paper cut you all the way down the field and go on a long sustained drive. And I'm thinking that's what Bill Belichick was sort of banking on, was that the Rams were not going to be able to just take what's there and go on a long sustained drive. They were always
yeah,
looking
you're right.
for that home run, and it always ended up in a sack. And every time it ended up in one of these long, big coverage sacks, they go to the top-down footage, and there's dudes, running back, guy in the slot, somebody in the middle of the field. There was always somebody open. And they're highlighting this in the broadcast. Like, there were dudes for the Rams open all mm-hmm. the time. The Patriots' defense is garbage. But because the deep ball wasn't there, Jared Goff turtled.
It was awful to watch. It was surprising to watch, and it was just really, really bad television. The Around the NFL podcast referenced your favorite game of all time with the Chiefs and the Rams breaking the scoreboard, and you already talked about how that's not real football, and they
right.
brought that up in a sound drop that I think you would probably like. This is from the Around the NFL podcast as they recapped this past Super Bowl.
When halftime hit, I thought of the two teams who combined for over 100 points in that shootout, the Chiefs and Rams, two of the best offenses of the season, combined for 0 points in the first half the last two games against the Patriots, who allowed 7 points in the first half of three playoff games. The last team to do that was the
wow.
85 Bears.
Against three, statistically, of the best five offenses in football. I mean, it's really insane because who's the Patriots' best defensive players? It's, what, Flowers and
Stephon
and
Gilmore.
But these aren't guys.
That's why I'm saying mention Brian Flores more than twice during the broadcast,
that's
possibly.
Fair.
Just
that's
you
fair.
Know.
That's fair.
Yeah, they really did give a lot of credit to on the podcast to the New England Patriots defensive scheme. Brian Flores, the DC, who's going right to the Miami Dolphins as their head coach after this. But yeah, that's quite the thing when you think about what the Patriots did defensively with the Chargers, the Chiefs, and in a dome situation on turf on a fast track, the LA Rams. Basically just stifled all of them. The Chiefs woke up at the tail end of the second half, but before that, they were asleep just as much as the Chargers, just as much as the Rams. And I like to call the Patriots defense trash. That's been my calling card as part of why I never really believed in them the last few years, even though I wound up picking them in this game. I definitely did not have them at the beginning of the year. But there's got to be something about scheming it up and coaching defensively to make them look this stout, because they look like they could play defense with anybody the way they looked in these playoffs.
Yeah, it's just, man, I don't know. It's tough because, again, this is a year after they gave up 41 and had a 41 hung up on them by a backup quarterback and a rookie head coach. And mm-hmm. they come out this year and they give up three. Now, they gave up a lot of points to the Chiefs because that got crazy in the fourth quarter. And that yeah. could have gone either way. And they had actually blown that lead twice to the point, you know, where the Chiefs had the lead. So it wasn't, you know, and they got up so fast and so early on the Chargers that by the time the Chargers mounted any type of a comeback, it was just not going to happen. It was just too much. The Rams had opportunities. And I think it wasn't so much that it was great defense in the Super Bowl. I think it was inexperience. It really was. It was sad. Would the Saints have done that?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, I see your point. It wasn't necessarily the scheming up. It was the fact that the Rams and Goff and their 12-year-old coach didn't know how to make the adjustment. But the Chiefs don't have a 12-year-old coach, and they looked like they looked about this bad for the first half. And the Chargers certainly don't have a young quarterback, and Phillip Rivers couldn't solve the Patriots at all either. So
no.
I don't know exactly what to put my finger on, but it's certainly not the great New England defensive players. They didn't get good players overnight. They just so I got to give it to the coaching for them looking as well as they looked in these playoffs.
And maybe it was Brian Flores. Maybe he's like a defensive guru, defensive wizard, because that wasn't a Matt Patricia defense out there, was it?
Wow. No, it wasn't. The genius with the pencil behind his ear. I don't think they would have done this in these playoffs with Matt Patricia running the show.
So maybe Brian Flores, you know, because the one of the other things in the run-up to the Super Bowl that all the talking head media was talking about was the legacy of the Patriots, right? Belichick, you know, because he's the greatest head coach of all time. And a lot of the pushback to that was, but everybody who coaches for him, who goes on to coach other places, is a disaster.
Suck.
There is no coaching tree. This is not Bill Walsh, right?
Right.
Where you're going to populate half the league with head coaches who are all going to be so good that they then begin to populate the league with their disciples, and they start branching out. Just about every head coach that has come out of the Bill Belichick coaching tree, absolutely terrible. Josh McDaniels, disaster. Matt Patricia, so far, disaster. Bill O'Brien, I guess Bill O'Brien's been okay. I know you're not his biggest fan.
I respect his offensive mind. I don't know if he's made out to be a head coach in the NFL, but I respect his knowledge.
And there's some others, but yeah, that's just funny that to actually hear
Man Genius.
People, yeah, to actually
that
hear multiple
was a disaster.
People crap all over the legacy of Bill Belichick not being able to produce a grade A quality NFL head coach under him.
Yeah, I wonder how many of those guys are gonna in the future maybe take it easy on the attitude and try to actually establish themselves instead of coming right out with the Belichick type of power grab. And I'm going to run the show and I'm going to show everybody that was Eric Mangini's big thing, was he was going to take over the whole building and show everybody how an organization is run from the top down and without having accomplished anything himself. And
right.
That, you see how that worked out. Romeo Crennel got a shot as well, I believe, out of the Belichick tree.
He did.
And didn't really do anything with it. So, yeah.
There's a lot of rotten fruit laying below the Belichick tree, huh?
Yes, there is. But you still can't deny the six rings, no matter what. You're not going to be able to take those away.
I fully expect that by the end of our lifetimes that trophy will be named after him.
I do too. I was thinking about that. The Halas Trophy will eventually be the Halas Belichick Trophy or something like that.
Oh, well, in the AFC, I believe it's the.
The AFC is the Lamar Hunt Trophy.
It's Lamar Hunt. What's, so they may. I don't know if they'll switch that, but the Super Bowl Trophy is the Lombardi Trophy.
Okay, I got my legendary coaches mixed up. Halas is the NFC, and Lombardi
is the
NFC. Whole thing.
Right. Lombardi I could see that being a Lombardi Belichick type split.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. It won't be immediate, but yeah, years down the road. Yeah,
if the NFL is all about money, and if you got a bunch of dead presidents' pictures on there and you need to make some room, someone's going to have to come off the money to put Belichick on there, right?
Yeah. No, you're right.
You know, or if you have a Mount Rushmore of coaches, someone's face is getting blasted off because when he's done and it's all said and done, you can't deny eight Super Bowls. I'm sorry, nine Super Bowl appearances, six championships. Patriots are tied with the Steelers now for most Super Bowl championships. I'm just going to have to completely wreck the Patriots now and just pick them to go to the Super Bowl next year so they don't get anywhere close.
I have no idea who I'm picking in the AFC. We already know my NFC pick. I've already picked the Falcons to win it all.
And ironically, you are not alone. There are people a lot of people are already even in the because in the aftermath of the Super Bowl, all you could start talking about was 2019.
Sure.
Nobody wanted to talk about the Super Bowl as a legacy or any of that. People just wanted to pretend like the game didn't happen. Well, let's just talk about next year. Bleacher Report puts out the article of the teams that are ready to contend for a title, like right now. And it's like Falcons, Patriots, Chiefs, and there was one other one on there. Notably absent were the Saints. I believe the Rams were the other one on there. So everybody always gives love to the Super Bowl loser, although losing the Super Bowl doesn't usually go well. So we'll see. Chiefs had a rough season and had to get Nick Foles to come in and bail it out again. Atlanta made the playoffs. And that's actually interesting that the last two Super Bowl losers did make the playoffs, which kind of breaks some tradition.
But this Super Bowl with the Rams, it kind of has a Marino feel to it, that you have a meteoric rise from a young quarterback,
yeah,
and he makes it to the Super Bowl and clearly isn't ready for the big moment, and you go, man, his future's so bright, though. He'll be back. They'll definitely be back somewhere
yeah,
down the road. And Marino never made it back.
Yeah, but Marino was great for a decade and a half after that.
Sure.
Jared Goff going to be that great for a decade and a half after that? No, never made it back. Never had the support. Never had the running game. It just never worked out.
As the GOAT proves, you don't have to be as great as Marino to make it back to the Super Bowl and win six rings. Because Brady on his best day couldn't touch Dan Marino. But it doesn't matter because he's got the titles.
Well, it doesn't make you the greatest of all time. Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time, right? Six rings, but Bill Russell won 10, right?
Sure.
Are we just measuring, you know, titles? Because if that's all it is, then sure, give it to Brady. He's got six. He's the greatest. He's got six titles. Michael Jordan, you're crap. Bill Russell's got 10.
No, I'm just saying, saying is Goff going to be as great as Marino to never make it back to a Super Bowl? He doesn't have to be as good as Marino, and he might still make it back. So it's just kind of the luck of the draw a little bit, and of course, who else is surrounding you and who's on the other teams on the other side as far as your team's defense. Because again, a lot of people focus on the quarterback and don't pay attention to the other side of the ball. Realizing that the quarterback doesn't play defense at all, there's only so much he can do. He controls one half of the game, and that's it. So if the Patriots' defense didn't come out and do what they did to Jared Goff, then Brady doesn't have a sixth ring because he didn't play like a Super Bowl-winning quarterback at all.
No.
They said it on one of these podcasts I was listening to, I think the Around the NFL podcast. If you tell the Rams and their high-flying offense going into the Super Bowl that the Patriots are going to put up 13 – and all you got to do to win the Super Bowl is get two touchdowns, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, here we go, because we're definitely going to do that. So, again, back to giving as much credit to the Patriots' defense as possible, because they really are what won the Super Bowl. It wasn't Peyton Manning with the Broncos bad, but it was pretty bad.
That Super Bowl was interesting. Because I do still give a lot of credit to Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning was terrible in that Super Bowl, but Peyton Manning knew it. Peyton Manning knew he was hurting his
not
team.
To throw the bad
right.
turnover, not don't make yeah. the stupid mistake.
Peyton Manning knew that a three and out and a punt was still better than a noodle arm pick six or getting strip sacked, something Cam Newton did not learn in a Super Bowl, right? The strip sacks and holding on to the ball. To Peyton Manning was like, I would call him terribly efficient in that Super Bowl because he was bad, but he knew what he was doing. He knew he didn't have it anymore. And that takes some humility that a lot of guys don't have. I don't even know if Brady would have that humility if he got to the end and he was truly done and he was getting carried by a defense and he couldn't be the guy. He couldn't make that throw to Edelman anymore. He just had nothing left in the tank. Would he have it in himself to not try to even make the throw? Because Peyton Manning was not even – he was having none of it. The best offense for the Denver Broncos in that Super Bowl was their defense, and Peyton Manning knew it. And then that effort, I commend that effort. It was the worst effort at that point by a winning Super Bowl quarterback. It probably still is the worst.
Yeah. No, it takes a lot of self-awareness too, which most great athletes don't have a lot of self-awareness because you don't become a great athlete with a whole lot of self-awareness. You just kind of go for it and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. So I don't know any, I can't name a single quarterback that would have, you know, gimped themselves in the Super Bowl. Right? To just for the ring. And he did it.
Jared Goff didn't learn the lesson. He, like you said, he got it going late and then got greedy and tried too much and wound up getting picked off right there near the goal line.
The pick right after the maybe it was defensive. Yeah, it was pass interference. After that play, the heave, it was the same. It was just like the same route, and it was just a total heave, and it was terrible.
It was a bad decision.
That was a schoolyard heave. I know that because I did it enough. Like, you don't want to get sacked. Just throw that thing out there and hope something good happens. And even the receiver was lost. Brandon Cook was like, what? That was for me?
I was supposed to. Okay. Bad effort for Goff all around. New England, this really felt like it was going to go a different way as someone who picked New England and was sitting there, you know, rocking back and forth. And the first drive where New England runs and runs and runs and runs it down the Rams' throat, and then Brady's first throw of the game gets picked off. And you talk about a door opening for the Rams to just, every time Brady throws, we're going to just pick him off. We can do whatever we want. You would have thought that would have relaxed Jared Goff and relaxed the Rams. Like, okay, we can take over now. We got the first drive. It looked like they were going to run us over, and they wound up turning it over on the first throw. So, lucky break for us. Let's go take advantage. Let's go play our game, which, of course, they didn't do. But I was worried. I was like, is this going to be one of those Brady games in the Super Bowl like last year? And he put up a lot of yards. He scored a lot of points, but he also had a lot of plays where it was like, I thought it was going to be one of
Brady
those.
Brady was off just in general. I mean, any little tiny, and just like we always know, any little tiny bit of pressure, and he was off the spot. I mean, there were a lot of errant throws again. And, when he was clean and all he had to do was throw those little darts, then he was Tom Brady. That's just what he does. He's accurate on that short and intermediate stuff, and he'll kill you, death by paper cuts. That's just the way they do their offense, and that's good for them. I commend them for it. They won the Super Bowl, and the only winners in the Super Bowl were you for winning the picks, finally putting me away, and the Patriots. Yeah. Everybody else, losers. Everybody.
I watched the whole thing.
Anybody who watched the whole game, like you and I actually quit. I gave up on the game at about the 2-minute warning. I was just like, this thing's over. And, everybody who watched, everybody who paid advertising, because even, some of those commercials, Bowl commercials. I think we've jumped the shark now on Super Bowl commercials. I think those are officially just not a thing anymore. They release them online like a week before now, so you don't even have the anticipation where you got to see them. And the ones that you do see are just bad.
It was a bad year for commercials, that's for sure.
Very bad year for commercials. Did you get your social justice angle at all for the halftime show? Because you were really pushing that hard on the last show.
Absolutely not, and I was only pushing it as just it was just an angle. It was just something to look forward to because there was so little to look forward to.
I was going to say my daughter did have line of the night when one of the rappers, and I don't know which one it was, came rolling out in his caddy with the big mink coat on. My daughter, who's watching the halftime show with us, says verbatim, this is quote, "Why is that guy wearing a super soft girly jacket?" That was from my daughter. I said that to you right away. She just deadpan completely, just looks at my wife. Why is that guy wearing a super soft, just the way she described it. It's a super soft girly jacket.
Did you have to break it down? Honey, that's a black person. They don't do things like we do. No, I repeated the question when you texted it to me. I repeated it to my wife, and my wife had the right answer right immediately, which I didn't even think of. He's pimping. That's what they do. He's just pimping. That's his style. That's That's pretty much it. Yeah, you can't explain Pimba to your daughter because she's too young.
No.
But even
that was boring.
Right. The only thing I was looking forward to possibly was, you know, a raised fist or some, you know, a Kaepernick jersey on one of the rappers or something like that. Because again, it was just, you know, so much in the community of black people online and stuff like that, wondering, you know, was any black acts going to be part of the Super Bowl at all? Because once Maroon 5 was announced, and you know, they didn't announce any rappers right at the beginning. It was just Maroon 5 by themselves. It's like, oh, okay. They must have went to every black person on the planet, and they all said no because of the Colin Kaepernick thing. So then when they added a couple of rappers as guest performers, with a couple of weeks to go before the Super Bowl, like, oh, okay. Well, what are they going to do? Are they going to, you know, have a message or something like that? No, they didn't. It was just pretty straightforward by the books. Travis Scott had half his performance bleeped out.
Yeah, I did notice that. We just sort of let that go.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't say, the kids didn't notice and we didn't say anything. But, you know, I mean, Maroon 5 is just one of those, you know, it's such a milquetoast top 40, you know. They're so interchangeable with so many other things. It's like there's no iconography really with them. I guess they have a few big hits. You know, okay. Great.
And they have about as much right to be up there as Bruno Mars did. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. They probably have more breadth to their discography, I guess I would say, if they even have them. If they have discs, I guess they still have CDs. So we'll still call it a discography. But I'm sure they have a little bit more tenure in the marketplace. But, you know, for a while there, after the Nipplegate thing, it became just bring out the geriatric.
Yeah.
Maroon 5 made me miss
Bruce Springsteen, actually.
Super Bowl 54, they're going to dig up the bones of Roy Orbison and have him sing Pretty Woman at the halftime show of Super Bowl 54. So, yes, let's keep the Super Bowl halftime show light and fluffy and
either
and
that or
drama,
a hologram of Johnny Cash or something.
Oh, yeah, we got Prince, right?
Well, he was
playing
alive
on the bed sheets or something. No. In Minnesota. Wasn't that in Minnesota last year with Prince playing on the bed sheets?
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that was bad.
How'd you forget that? That was like your boy.
Because it was bad.
He did like 2 hours straight talking about Prince.
I understand that. The concept of taking a Prince performance that he obviously did not approve of, because he can't approve it because he's dead. And putting it up is just, and with Justin Timberlake doing a duet with it or something like that. No. I understand he was trying to honor him, but no, bad idea. Don't do that again.
That's a nice stadium up there in Minnesota. I'm sure they'll get another Super Bowl.
So you turned off at the 2 minute warning. So you didn't see the field goal to make it 13-3 to basically put it away.
Right.
That was like,
a fourth in inches that they didn't go for, which,
That's the only last bit of drama or whatever that I wanted to talk about was, I absolutely thought that field goal, I thought that should have been a run. The way the Patriots were running the ball, what they wound up, .154 as a team, running the football, and it's really is fourth and inches. The way they measured it, it was basically like three or four chain links away from converting that. That's not even, you don't even have to have a strong running game. That basically, to me, screamed for the Brady sneak.
Oh, that's a Brady sneak. Yeah, no, absolutely.
And even if you don't want to do that, Burkhead, just blast Burkhead up the middle.
I know the fear. You know the fear. The fear is you go for it, you don't get it, and it's a 10-3 game, and the Rams are one play away.
He's Belichick. What did he just do?
The Rams are one play away from tying the game. And honestly, if I'm the Rams and I go down and I get the touchdown at the end there, go for two.
Just escape.
Yeah. Just either go for two and escape, or go for two and give me the cheapest cover of all time in a Super Bowl pick. which I was kind of holding out some hope for there. But Yeah, if they don't get that, so I understand it, and that's faith in Gostkowski. He's good for missing some. He missed another one in this game, but you know,
right.
Belichick trusts his kicker.
Even if you don't trust your kicker.
Yeah, that ended it. There was no debate after that. That was a 10-point game with a minute to go.
No, I get that, but there's too much to go bad on a kick.
Yeah.
I don't care how much
Cody
you trust your kicker.
Cody Parkey's not your kicker.
I don't. Whoever the kicker is, the worst that you can think of, it doesn't matter. The snap can be bad. The hold can be off. The laces can
be
out.
Blocked. You get
blocked.
And have a run back for a touchdown.
There's too many things that can potentially go wrong on a field goal to me to take that risk.
Yeah,
I actually think that was a bad coaching move by Belichick, and he got away with it.
I agree with you. I actually 100% agree with you. I was aware of the situation. I wasn't watching the game, but I was still following it on my phone. And when it comes up on my phone and it says 4th and inches at the whatever it was, 25 or 27 yard line, I'm like, oh, that's a Brady sneak.
Right.
And then I put my phone down and I picked it up and I see 13-3 and I was like, whoa, wow.
They went for the field goal? Yeah, I was shocked too. I really was.
So. Yeah.
Good on the Patriots. They got away with that, thankfully.
But if that's the most exciting, that's like the most – that's what you had
to
get
in. Yeah, I know. And then the only rewindable moment of the night was in the post game that you didn't see.
I watched zero because I did not care.
So I'm sitting – my wife and I are sitting there. We're not really watching. It's just on. At this point, the game has made me comatose, and I can't move. So I'm watching it. I want to change the channel, but I can't because I can't move. The embrace between Tom Brady and Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, was already uncomfortable and long in the way they're kind of looking into each other. As it was already kind of weird. Something and whispering something in his ear and stuff like that. And at one point, as they're hugging and embracing and talking and going back to hugging and stuff, their mouths passed so close past each other, it almost looked like they were kissing. My wife is the one that picked up the remote and said, did they just kiss? I think they just kissed. She's the one that had to rewind and check that to see if they just kissed. That's been the thing. Whole article about that it looked like that they came like millimeters away from kissing each other. That was like the only thing that was remotely interesting that was worth rewinding for the entire evening. That and Kraft looked like they almost kissed each other. That's just the whole organization is weird. Everybody's weird. Belichick's weird. Got some blonde bimbo running to hug him on the sideline after it's over. It's like, who the hell is that? Looking like she's 20 years younger than him. Kraft is weird. Brady's ultra weird. Did you read the report or hear about the report that came out during Super Bowl week that the Patriots apparently think that the reason Gronk was so beat up all season was because he was trying to do Tom Brady's training methods and TB12 methods with his quack trainer, Alex Guerrero. They think he fucked Gronk's body. I think that's why Gronk is not 100%. So everything about that organization.
I think it was the wrestling, the partying, and the porn actresses that probably got to Gronk.
Perhaps. But the weird-ass trainer might be a part of it, too. That wouldn't surprise me either. No, the hard lifestyle is certainly makes you wonder about him. And then he wants to get into wrestling after that. How long is that going to last? slam he takes.
Yeah, so does Gronk retire and then he goes to WrestleMania and beats Brock Lesnar? I don't think so.
Right. The first time Lesnar gets a hold of him or anyone really.
Yeah.
And
first suplex.
The mat.
Rob Gronk.
He's going to be like,
he shatters into pieces. Literally.
Right.
He shatters into pieces. They're going to bring Joey Styles back. Oh my God. He's dead.
Oh my God, you killed Gronk, you bastards.
What a terrible Super Bowl. Jesus Christ.
I kept my baby on the tree top when the wind blows that way.
la 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 la. Go to sleep, go to sleep. Close your bloodshot eyes. You're a dope and you're alive. And I hope you don't wake up. A twirly, talatiho, a teal high, radio, and yata, yata, a little tata, tula.
Gotta love that. Gotta classic Tom and Jerry.
Worst Super Bowl we've seen? Have we seen worse? I always reference Steelers Seahawks. That was more
bad.
Exciting than this. That was bad, but this was. I think this was worse. This was boring.
It was really, really
that
boring.
That wasn't a boring Super Bowl. That was the worst officiated Super Bowl. And I think that's
badly
why I remember
played
it
and
so
badly
poorly.
Officiated.
Yes, it was badly played, and the Seahawks just kept getting repeatedly hosed by the refs in that Super Bowl. Just over and over and over. The fact that that's not talked about so much about with the bad officiating is that an entire could affect the Super Bowl. What would happen if this bad officiating leaked into the Super Bowl? People, it's already happened.
It didn't happen to an East Coast team, but
no. No, it happened to Matt Hasselbeck and the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes. If it happened to Roethlisberger and the Steelers, you'd never hear the end of it.
Well, at that point, that wasn't quite yet, Roethlisberger and the Steelers. I think that was his rookie season.
I understand, but it was still the Steelers. So if it would have happened to the Steelers franchise, you'd still be hearing about it.
So I think this might take the cake. I mean, even the blowouts when we were growing up were sort of fun.
A little bit.
They were terrible, but they were blowouts. But at least you were watching greatness on one side of the football.
Right, that was the thing. What Steve Young and Jerry Rice did to the Chargers should be criminal. But at least those are all timers doing all time.
Yeah,
things.
I believe there was a Joe Montana over the Broncos. I believe there was a 55-10 in there.
That also should be a crime.
After the Bills' first Super Bowl loss, they were all disasters.
Right. Yeah, the Cowboys just kept ripping them and then ripped them again. And then the Redskins beat their ass somewhere in the middle of that. Someone on the Around the NFL podcast brought up, and I have to take myself out of the running to vote for this because of how personal the loss was to me in my pocketbook. But for comparisons of a young quarterback looking like a deer in headlights on the Super Bowl stage and completely getting destroyed. Someone brought up what Kerry Collins looked like going against the Baltimore Ravens defense. And because I had picked the Giants for a lot of money in that game and basically from the opening coin toss when the Giants win the coin toss and decide to receive against the in contention for one of the greatest defenses of all time. And I got a whole Giordano's pizza ordered and I'm sitting there by myself. And before they've kicked off, I know that I lost because that's the dumbest thing I could ever imagine happening is winning the coin toss against the Ravens defense and deciding, I want to take the ball against them. That's what I want to do first is go on the field against that defense. It's like, what the fuck are you? What? Oh yeah. It was over right then and there.
They were going to assert their dominance.
So I don't know if you remember that game and how awful it was, but
that was
up
a bad
there.
Game.
That's in contention. I can't vote for it because I lost so much money in that game.
Colts-Bears was not a very good Super Bowl in the rain.
Way better than this.
That was a better Super Bowl, but it was a bad. I'm just trying to give some perspective. Like
it was bad.
See, I'm pulling up bad Super Bowls. But universally, they're all better. I could take more of that Ravens-Giants. I believe that was Ravens. Yeah, it was Ravens-Giants, right? I could take that because I knew I was watching greatness. I was watching defense since the 85 Bears to walk on a football field, win their Super Bowl. and you could appreciate that. And that's what I did. And so you were watching greatness. I did not feel like it. Were we watching greatness last Sunday? No.
No. Well, if you listen to the hot takes, you were watching a Hall of Fame performance from Julian Edelman.
Oh. Oh, man. I told you I had to take some Imodium before the show. I could have done was DVR that game, because if I'm ever having trouble sleeping,
just put that on.
Right on.
It'll knock you right out. No, we certainly were not watching greatness on Sunday. We were watching a team that wasn't ready for the moment at all, and had an opponent that was ripe for the picking. Again, you say the Patriots are going to go in a dome on a fast track and score only 13. You're like, yes, we'll take that. We'll take you up on that, and we'll go get our 14, and we'll take a title. And no, they put up three.
That is why the coaching job done by Wade Phillips will forever go down as one of the biggest missed opportunities in a Super Bowl ever. Maybe even worse than being up on that team 28-3, because I'll tell you what, at least Atlanta got to 28.
That's quite the comparison to the biggest blown lead in Super Bowl history.
But the biggest blown opportunity, I don't think it was having them down and not being able to put your foot on their throat. I think it was that you had them down. You held them completely in check for the whole game. You gave up one touchdown drive to Tommy. You gave up one touchdown drive for the whole game to that guy. Who's going to, you know, and that offense, and stymied them and did just enough and got them off the field and created punts and created an early turnover. There was some talk about how Wade Phillips's defenses have kind of stymied Brady in his career, and he did it again, and they couldn't do just jack shit with it.
Couldn't do diddly poo.
Yeah. I mean, even get to the 30 a couple of times and let Zuerlein boot you a few field goals. They put no pressure on the Patriots. Even when it got to 3-3, were you excited?
At no point was I excited on Sunday.
You know, usually you get towards the end of a Super Bowl if it's close, and you start to get that, like, that finality, and you get the heart starts to feel the heart bumping a little bit, and you're like, oh, man, this thing's getting real tight. It's getting real close. I never had that feeling watching that game. You kind of just wanted it to be over.
Yeah, put them out of their misery. The Rams looked like they needed to just be put down and just go away, go back home to California and try again next year, because this is not going to happen today.
And the sad part was for the majority of that game, for 53 minutes of that game, all the Rams needed was a play.
I was kind of waiting for it. Like, man, how many opportunities have the Patriots had, and they just keep letting these guys hang around, and yeah, I had a bad feeling that the Rams are going to just put it together and find those plays, and they never did. They almost did with the Brandon Cooks bomb that was terribly underthrown and, you know, could have been a huge play, could have been interference, but...
Yeah, or the bat away in the end zone. That was a big one. It was a huge play.
Yeah, the running coverage, the blown coverage by the Patriots, and Jason McCourty has to run over and pick that up and make the play. Yeah, I just knew they were going to do something like that, because the Patriots just kept giving him opportunity after opportunity to find a way to get in there and just do something. They did nothing the whole night. They just couldn't do anything.
I feel bad. You know, again, just all the people who had, like, their Super Bowl parties, or all the people who were watching this at sports books. It's just everybody who's just excited for the Super Bowl. Like, it's a national holiday.
And that's like, what you got.
You wake up on Christmas and there's under your tree. That's what you got.
Pretty much. For anyone wondering about my performance on the Pick Watch website, which I was leading at the end of the regular season,
yeah.
and then they start having postseason games added on. So I guess I had to keep playing through the postseason. Well, I was having a pretty bad postseason, of course. Somebody had caught me from behind to be in the lead by one win in the win column. They were up on me, but they had more losses than me. So if I could find a way to pick against them and beat them, then I would be back on top at the end. So what wound up happening was I'm waiting on this guy the entire 2 weeks to make his pick so I can pick the opposite of him. So I was in your position. I had to wait on him to make his pick. And no matter what he picked, I was going to have to pick the opposite. And it came all the way down to Sunday afternoon that he hadn't – I don't believe he had made his pick yet. And he finally made his pick first, and he picked the Los Angeles Rams, leaving me to pick the Patriots. So thank goodness that he made the wrong choice with his decision, and I made the right choice with my decision against you and picking the Patriots. But man, that's the pressure. You know that you make the right pick and you win, and you don't, then it's all over. And that's what happened. I was able to see that he made his Rams pick, and I was able to sneak in and get my Patriots pick. And yes, I did sit there all the way up to 5:29 Central Time, refreshing the page to make sure he didn't switch his pick to the Patriots, and then I would have to switch my pick to the Rams. But he did not do that.
So, have you officially won?
They haven't said anything on the site. I'm if you look at the standings, I'm number one. So I guess I won, but they were always vague about what prize would be to the person who won.
Well, you win the points championship.
I'm Jimbo. I win the points championship. No, Jimbo, I won the championship. Jimbo just won the points championship, but he actually lost the league. I won. I actually won. I got the best percentage. I got the most tied with the most wins. However you want to slice it, I won. I just don't know if I won anything at all on a keychain. No, I may have, it may never. I'm on the Pick Watch forums. I'm looking around, and I'm this close to contacting them and asking them, hey, you said you're going to have a prize for this thing. Are you still going to have a prize? I don't want to be that guy yet. It's only been 2 days. Next week, if they haven't said anything, I might have to contact them and see what's going on.
Just to even get some recognition as being the winner.
You have a prize. I want a prize. Send me a Rubik's Cube. I don't care. I want a prize. I won. I don't win things. This time I won, so I want something for it.
All right. Well, that finishes up your 4-7 postseason. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so proud.
Well, I'm going to take my 7-4.
I don't deserve it.
My points championship is the fact that I went 7-4 in the postseason against you. So
there you go. You can tout that.
I can. I beat the guy who was number one in Pick Watch for the postseason.
Ooh, impressive.
That sounds good.
Like that. Yeah. yourself sound good. Sound built up and important. I like that. I'm always a fan of making yourself sound more important than you are.
Even when you're like, you know, false bravado. That's what you're all about.
Damn right.
I think that's.
Hey, at least I'm man enough to admit it.
That's all right.
Yeah, you know, we all got to have our lot in life. So for the rest of the offseason, the offseason is now officially started. Our schedule of shows, as those of you who listen are already aware of, is that the next thing you probably will hear from us would be some sort of Oscars preview show with Dave, the movie expert. Now I have to contact, make sure that he's on board again, but he's been on board every year that we've done the podcast.
Yeah.
And
the only show I've ever missed, I believe, was last year's Oscar show.
Yeah. I can listen and podcast as to why you missed that show. Cause we wound up updating, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
I remember the name of that podcast now. Kings of Non Sequitur Up Close and Personal is where Jason describes exactly why he missed last year's show. So
okay, let's not talk about that anymore.
If you're into pain, go back and listen to that podcast.
Pain.
our prediction, pain. So Oscars preview show should be next. And coming up not too long after that is March Badness. Yes, it's coming. It's quicker than you think. It's already February,
it's crazy.
Which means that March Badness will be starting in about 5 or 6 weeks or so. It's not that far away. I'm already taping my games and trying to do my scouting and getting in that mode. And then not too long after that is going to be a baseball preview, because baseball is going to start like a week after March Madness starts.
But will you have Loyola Chicago in the Sweet 16 like I did? I had Loyola Chicago in the Sweet 16.
You're pumping up all your achievements. I absolutely did not have Loyola in the Sweet 16. So. Tune into March Badness and see what new predictions
we
can pull.
Rare air on that one, having them getting that far.
No question. Now, did you have them in the Final Four? Because that would have been something.
I did not.
That would have really been something. I still don't know how the hell they did that. I really don't. But
back cuts and reverse layups.
Lots of them.
I still remember. It's like it was ingrained in my brain. And then when they finally ran into that team, that it was like, they're shutting that down. Like, they're not letting them just do back cuts and reverse layups. I knew they were going to lose, and they did.
They're like the Rams. They ran into a defense that shut down what they do best. Like, now what
they could only do one thing. They had one move. They found a team that figured that out and stopped the move, and they had nothing left.
And that was the end of Cinderella. So definitely tune in to see what other special picks Jason has in store for that one. That's another one where you brag about that great accomplishment to take the shine off the fact that I actually picked not just the champion, but the runner-up as well. I actually had the Villanova-Michigan matchup completely predicted before March Madness began. So clearly I won March Madness based on that.
Yes.
So we're getting geared up for that again. We're getting geared up for baseball. We'll be making our trip to Chicago in the middle of all that.
So
you are officially
in for Chicago this year.
I have purchased the bus ticket already. I'm definitely going to be there.
All right. So you're up Friday, back Sunday.
That's right.
All right. I was waiting for the word from you to book to book the accommodations. So now that I know it's official, I will get on that.
It is official.
It's funny because I actually I said I wanted to try to find a place to get some rooms in Skokie, because that's usually, you know, we're out there on the north side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I find there's a Holiday Inn in Skokie, and the place that we always meet for breakfast is right next door.
I was just about to say, I think there's a hotel next door to that place.
There is, and it's reasonably affordable, so that may be where we end up, which would be literally 5 minutes from where we have the draft, which would be so nice.
That would be very nice. I can't remember the last time I've been in a Holiday Inn, though. It's been a while.
You'd be a lot smarter if you stayed in one.
That's what I keep hearing. So we have that coming up. And then we'll get back and recap, of course, the draft, the baseball fantasy draft, which is why we go to Chicago, the greatest day in sports, as we call it.
It truly is.
And in the middle of the season, of course, the draft aftermath when the NFL draft occurs. And lots of there's a name for what we've been doing all these years, by the way. All the other shows that we do that we just kind of jump in when some sort of, you know, national news or when we just feel like shooting the shit, we break in with a special show. Those are supposed to be called pop-up shows. When we just drop a show in the middle with no warning like that, it's called a pop-up show. So that's we got a lot of pop-up shows that we have in the off-season as well. So look out for all those shows coming down the
path. Yeah, every once in a while we'll just kind of get that, you know, thing like, yeah, we haven't had a show in a while. Let's have a show.
And talk about anything and everything.
We do the old potpourri. That's what I believe what we we referenced it early on in the first season, second season of the show with the old Jeopardy category where it could just be about anything.
That's right.
So we Kings of Non Sequitur, we move into that mode now. It's starting to become old habit.
Yeah, this is what we do. We start end of our sixth year of podcasting and going to be starting our seventh when we start the NFL season in August.
Wow. That is crazy.
Time flies.
All right.
Yeah, I think
I'm ready. I think I'm ready. That Super Bowl drained me
of every bit of life. Put us to sleep, and we just woke up in time to do a Super Bowl recap show.
I'm watching the snow pile up outside. I get up in the morning and shovel out the driveway. That'll be fun. So,
back to the snow again, huh?
Yeah, we went from the cold to warm to everything froze over and ice and fog. Uh-huh. And today, where I'm looking out there, there's probably a half a foot of snow that's down right now.
Oof.
So one of the heavier snows that we've had so far this winter, where it was like actually like you were out in it and like you knew you were in a snowstorm. Everything else that we've had this year has just been like flurries that just kind of accumulated up to an inch or two. And you're like, oh, it's an annoyance. This actually felt like you were in a snowstorm tonight.
Yeah, half a foot is not an annoyance. Half a foot is, oh, fuck, we gotta shovel and get out of here.
Yeah,
well,
so
you got that done, but spring training is starting very soon. And the
pitchers and catchers report in like 2 weeks. I'm ready.
Boys of Summer are coming back very shortly.
Yeah, we'll have our baseball preview, right? And you mentioned that, of course.
That's right. So with that, he is Jay, I'm Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Football season is finally over with that shit show of the Super Bowl.
Man.
That
and
was
this
awful.
Year on the baseball show, let's try not to have all the same teams. Let's just try.
we'll see what happens. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.